Welcome to the Golden Black Radio pregame show as we get you set for Saturday's kickoff. Now here's your host, Kyle Chardas.
The Boilermakers look to rebound after a disappointing final 20 minutes of their opener. A last-second loss at Nevada last week, but they'll likely be challenged by SEC opponent Vanderbilt back home in Ross-Ade Stadium on Saturday. I'm Kyle Charters, GoldenBlack.com's Tom Dienhart, Brian Newbert, and Alan Karpik here for the Golden Black Radio pregame show. All right, Tom, Purdue versus Vanderbilt, noon on Saturday. The Boilermakers coming off a disappointing, to say the least, loss against Nevada last Friday, leading that game by 17. A little past midway through the third quarter. As concise as you can tell me, what happened?
Yeah, tough. Well, I think if you want to start pointing fingers, Kyle, there's a lot of fingers that can be pointed in a lot of different directions. Offensively, score more than 7 points in the second half, right? The only Purdue touchdown came on a gadget play, honestly, where they handed off to King Daru. He pitched it back to Elijah Sinlar, who threw to a wide-open David Bell. That was your only second-half touchdown for Purdue. So, again, they needed more from the offense, from a point production standpoint. Defensively, get off the field, make a stop. I understand the defense got thrown back on the field time and again in the fourth quarter by offensive inefficiencies and by turnovers. Still, find a way to make a play to get off the field, get a third down stop, get a fourth down stop, get the ball back for your offense. And then, of course, Kyle's special teams, the muff punts. The decision by Rondale Moore to try to pick up that bouncing punt was ill-advised, to put it kindly. There's a one-bounce rule. If you can't pick it up after one bounce, leave it alone. I get it. He's trying to make a play, trying to make something happen. You like the aggressive mindset, but still, why take that risk when it did not need to be made?
Rondale Moore might have been trying to be aggressive on that play. It didn't work out. Jeff Braun would like his team and maybe himself to be more aggressive in fourth quarters of games. That means offensively and maybe a little bit defensively, too. I think he felt that Purdue set back a little bit too much on the defensive side of things. That's been a big message for him this week, right? Just be more aggressive.
Yeah, he mentioned that at his Monday press conference. There's no doubt about it. Don't take your foot off the gas. You referenced the big lead Purdue had late into the third quarter. They were not able to protect. Some of that was due to the offense losing that edge, losing that aggressive edge, taking its foot off the gas, as Jeff Braun put it. Kyle, you talked about the defense, too. It's every bit as culpable when it comes to not being aggressive late in the game. Talked to Anthony Poindexter yesterday. He mentioned the defense needed to be more aggressive. Braun did, too. He thought Nevada got accustomed to what Purdue was doing defensively, was able to exploit it. A lot of three-man fronts, dropping eight. So, again, both sides of the ball need to keep and maintain a more aggressive posture throughout the game, regardless of what the score is.
Come out of that game with a few concerns, the biggest ones probably being the turnovers, a deficit of minus five. I don't know what the numbers say that teams win when they're minus five. It has to be low single digits. Probably under 5, maybe 2% of the time. So that's a concern. The offensive line, a concern, too. I thought it was okay in pass protection. Really struggled, though, to open up some running lanes. So as you look at those two things, what comes to mind?
Yeah, running the football. 96 yards rushing, 29 carries, 3.3 yards per carry. Kyle, that came against a Mountain West opponent that's not picked to win its division, that runs a 3-3-5 stack defense, more built to stop the pass than the run. So not a real glowing effort performance overall from a run game standpoint. The second leading rusher was Elijah Sinlar. Horvath did okay. I think he had 60 yards in the first half, largely ineffective in the second half. As you know, Kyle, and his listeners know, if you can't run the football, if you can't stop the run, you're not going to have a good chance to win any ball game. And Purdue's inability to run the football in the second half was really catastrophic in a lot of fronts because you can't move the chains, you can't bleed the clock. So I think Purdue's offensive line probably is what it is, right? All five guys played all 82 snaps, and they have to work with who they got and hope they get better.
You get real concerned if one of those guys is a little bit nicked up as well. Vanderbilt, how much do we know about the Commodores considering – you know, they played Georgia, really good team, great defense, and the Bulldogs lose that game at home 30-6. Do we know enough to make a determination of what Vanderbilt brings in?
I don't think so. I mean, I wouldn't want to be judged going against Georgia, right? I mean, one of the best teams in college football. Not just an SEC title contender, but a national championship contender. Checks all the boxes. You know, they're going to make a lot of teams look silly this year, Kyle. And Vandy looks silly, right? Playing at home. Couldn't do anything really offensively. Keyshawn Vaughn, the running back, had some success. But Vanderbilt could not throw the football downfield, period. End of story. Riley Neal, the grad transfer quarterback from Ball State, again, was under some duress. They had to rely mostly on the screen game to get any effectiveness in the pass game. So, again, hard to judge Vandy on that. Still, if you're Purdue, you're going to want to try make goal number one to slow down Keyshawn Vaughn in that ground game and make Riley Neal, that quarterback, try to beat you.
Nothing much new from an injury point of view for Purdue.
No, we asked Jeff Brohm about that Monday. He did not mention anybody. Kenneth Major, the cornerback, left that game in Nevada late, dinged up. He was practicing this week. He should be good to go, which is key because he played a good ball game as a quality cornerback. So, again, nothing new from an injury standpoint. So, Purdue looks like it should be good to go on Saturday.
All right, we'll bring Tom back in toward the end of the podcast. We'll talk a little bit of matchups against Vanderbilt, give our predictions, much more like that. But before we do that, let's get a weather forecast. Should be a great one on Saturday afternoon in Ross A. Let's bring in WLFI meteorologist Annie Brown with the game day forecast.
Well, it's ideal football weather this Saturday, Kyle. Calm and comfortable will be the theme. Dew points in the 50s from start to finish. In other words, humidity is out of the picture. If you're headed out to tailgate ahead of the game, lower 60s, you might want to bring a light jacket. Outside of that, you won't need it for kickoff. 72 degrees, partly cloudy, winds remaining very light out of the north, anywhere between 3 to 6 miles per hour for the day. Halftime, mid-70s, north winds around 3 miles per hour. We'll keep a sun cloud mix around for the remainder of the football game, pushing the upper 70s for our daytime highs. It's going to be pleasant weather from start to finish. Hey, if you're headed out, you'll be fine in jeans and a t-shirt. No rain gear needed. Have the sunglasses ready to go.
All right. That sounds pretty perfect for early September football weather. All right. Thank you. That's WLFI meteorologist Annie Brown with the game day forecast. We'll be back here in just a moment with more on Golden Black Radio.
Life doesn't come with a financial roadmap. It does come with a lot of bumps and red lights. Steering clear of those doesn't have to be difficult. With First Source Bank's online money management tools, you can see all your financial accounts, balances, and transactions in one place. So you can easily set monthly budgets to help manage expenses and debt. Get the green light to a successful financial future with First Source's money management tools. First Source Bank, where better is better. Member FDIC.
It's time to boiler up and join the Brohm Squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at FollettsPurdue.com.
Your neighborhood bar, 6th Street Dive Bar and Grill, is a perfect must-stop location on your way to and from the game at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette. Whether it be great food, authentic Tex-Mex, along with many Indiana favorites, served from 11 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day, sports, games, live music, trivia, or just fellow Boilermaker camaraderie, the Dive is the place to go. Don't miss Geeks Who Drink Trivia at 7:30 Tuesday nights, and live local music without a cover charge at 10 o'clock Fridays and Saturdays. If it's college sports you crave, the 6th Street Dive has you covered there too with its multiple big screens. So dive on in to the 6th Street Dive at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette.
It's time to break it down as we go in-depth about Purdue's opponent.
This is Tom Dienhardt. I'm talking to Chris Lee of VandySports.com, part of the Rivals Network. Vanderbilt, of course, coming to Purdue for the Boilermakers season opener. I want to talk to Chris, get the quick lowdown on what to expect from the Commodores. Hey, Chris, I know Vandy's coming off a tough loss to Georgia. Just give us a real quick idea what some of the strengths are of Vanderbilt as they make the trek up I-65 to West Lafayette. Well, I think their strength is their offense, Tom. You didn't really see it last week. They've got a running back in Keyshawn Vaughn, I think, is about as good as anybody's anywhere. He's explosive. He averaged nearly 8 yards a carry last year, had 360-plus yard touchdown runs in Vandy's bowl game. They've got an All-American tight end in Jared Pinkney, who's a potential NFL first-rounder. And they've got a receiver in Kalijah Lipscomb, who's going to finish probably in the top 10 in the SEC's career charts in receiving yards, receptions, and receiving touchdowns. They've got some other good skill position players on offense. I think the issue for them right now is injuries, Tom. They started four entirely new offensive linemen against Georgia, guys who had never made a start before. And Cole Clemens, the guy, the only starter they'd had in that lineup, who had always been a guard at Vanderbilt in 2 years, started for the first time at left tackle. They had some more injuries. Pinkney got banged up late in that game. Jamari Wakefield, their backup running back, is maybe going to be out for this next one. So, really, I think they've got some offensive skill position talent. They were really erratic at quarterback last week, too. Georgia does that to you, but long way to say, I think they are really good offensively, but the injuries and the offensive line shuffles have left some of that into question.
Is there a quarterback controversy brewing at all? Who's going to start when they come up here, you think?
Maybe. That's a good question. Riley Neal did not really play well. Now, their offensive line threw him off. The snaps were bad consistently from start to finish, and I think that throws the timing of the playoffs. So I don't know that we could completely and fairly judge Riley Neal last week, but it didn't look good when he was in there, that's for sure. At the same time, Deuce Wallace, who is a fourth-year player in that program, some people think that he was the better quarterback during fall camp. He came in late, and it was 9 snaps, and it was in garbage time. But the offense began to run a little better with him. So I think that is a little bit of a question mark coming in. I think Neal will start, but what happens if he struggles early?
Do they have a similar skill set?
They do. They both run decently well. Neal's a lot taller. He's about 6'6". Wallace is probably closer to 6'1", 6'2". Neal's got a stronger arm, but I think he throws it too hard sometimes. Deuce has got better touch on the ball, and I think probably better command of the offense, too.
Talk about the defense, Chris. What are some of the strengths and weaknesses? I know, again, judging what you do against Georgia is difficult, but again, talk about that Vandy defense, maybe what fans can expect to see from the Commodore unit on Saturday here.
Well, they got gashed in the run a week ago. Georgia averaged, I think, about 8 yards a carry. They just got blown off the ball. Now, I do think that they are better on the defensive line. They're deeper there. It probably didn't show because Georgia may have the best running game in the country between its offensive line and its tailback. So I don't know that that was a fair fight for them. I think the Purdue game will be a better way to judge them. And where I was surprised is their secondary played really well. They had two new corners that they broke in. Both of those kids have got Big Ten experience. Cam Watkins started at Illinois. Dante Carrier-Williams started, I think, 5 games his freshman year at Wisconsin. Deshaun Jerkins, a freshman safety, was terrific. He had, I think, 14 tackles in his first start. So I was really surprised with what they did there. They were not very good a year ago. They think they're better. We will wait and see. I think holding Georgia to 30 points, I'm not going to say it was smoke and mirrors, but the yards per play numbers weren't pretty. What they did is they did stiffen as Georgia got closer to the goal line, which accounts for something. But, again, I think that's a little bit of a wait and see what we see against Purdue there before I know better what they have.
Last question, Chris. Tell me what Vanderbilt has to do to win this game.
Well, they've got to avoid turnovers, one. Number two, they have got to get right on offense. They did not look at all like what I thought they would look like. I know Georgia's a really good defense. They are capable of generating some explosive plays. They were so inept in the passing game a week ago. Again, I can blame some of that on the snaps from center. But they've got to get a good performance out of Riley Neal. And if they don't get it out of him, I think they need to make the switch to Deuce Wallace pretty early, because you know Purdue's going to put up some points. So I think the key for them is finding that offensive consistency that we expected coming into the year. And you know what? We got Keyshawn Vaughn. That undoes a lot of ills, so I think he's big in this game, too.
Yeah, Keyshawn Vaughn burned Purdue for 180 yards rushing way back in 2015 as a true freshman running back at Illinois. So he's familiar with Ross-Ade Stadium, and no doubt he'll be a handful. Hey, Chris Lee, VandySports.com. We appreciate you dropping some Vandy knowledge on us.
Thank you, Tom.
If you're looking to list or buy a home in Greater Lafayette, Tippecanoe County, or the surrounding counties, give me a call at 765-412-5217 or email at kyle@chartersteam.com. Part of the Charters team at RE/MAX Ability Plus, we can offer a specialized marketing plan with photos, video tours, and more to help you sell your house while getting you in your next dream home. Contact me at kyle@chartersteam.com. On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill. Industrial and classic, the restaurant is built like a steakhouse but handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chopped salads, burgers, fresh fish and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. A warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer, inspired cocktails, and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, a cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event in the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table.
Often, things are worth more than they seem. For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa. Not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is the Golden Black Radio pregame show, the most in-depth guide to Saturday's game you'll find. Featuring the staff of Golden Black.
Let's bring in Brian Newbert, get his perspective on the Boilermakers as Purdue enters week two, a noon kickoff against Vanderbilt, the home opener coming off that loss last week at Nevada. Brian, I think that, we sort of knew this, Purdue here in year three of the Jeff Brohm era, still in the rebuild, but that was validated, I think, in a lot of ways with the loss to the Wolfpack.
Yeah. I think Purdue should have a lot going for it this year, a lot, probably more than it had going for it the last 2 years. I probably should extract 2017 from that because the defense, as it turned out, had some pieces that were obviously pretty ready to help them win right away. But this is not the most complete football team yet, and obviously the offensive front is an issue, but obviously the aggregate experience all across the board, as we talked about before the season, when you recruit to the point where you're young players are your better players, and you have to get them on the field right away, you are younger across the board, and with youth comes mistakes. Is that why Purdue lost to Nevada? It was probably part of the reason. It wasn't the entire reason whatsoever, but in the big picture, you know, Purdue still has some things to play through here as it grows into the program it wants to be.
Is Brohm going to have to run a balance this year between playing some experience to win and getting the new guys in who maybe are the more talented guys but don't have that experience? I mean, you know, last week we saw the more veteran receivers, I guess if you want to put Ahmad Anderson Jr. into that category, even though he's not out there with, you know, Jared Sparks. We saw Xander Horvath ahead of King DeRue and get a majority of the snaps. Will there be a point at this season where you think that he makes a little bit of adjustment? Could that come as soon as this week?
Well, if the experience isn't good enough to win with, then yeah, you're shooting yourself in the foot by putting the lesser of your personnel out there just because it's experienced. And I don't know who that would be. I don't know who they have who's played at a high enough level for experience to matter, mm-hmm, that they could put out there over a freshman. But I think you always have to put the best talent on the field, and if they're going to make mistakes, you have to live with those mistakes. But the reality was the mistakes that were made at Nevada were largely made by experienced guys. Mm-hmm. Youth probably contributed to some extent to the loss in Reno, but it was not the crux of the issue. It was one of a number of factors that probably played in.
So we've spent a lot of time this week talking about the officiating in the game. I know you wrote a part of your column this week about the officiating in the game. If you're the coach of Purdue, how much do you guard against your players talking too much about the officiating in the game and not about the mistakes that Purdue made in losing the game?
I think, you know, at the end of the day, the thing that fans always gravitate toward and that I think is probably the best way for coaches to handle it, you know, if you read internet message boards, when somebody,
which you do,
which I am paid to do. There's a fine distinction there. People can be discussing an officiating error, okay? And it can be perfectly valid, like the interception made by Kenneth Major was an interception. I think we can all agree on this. You get to a point where maybe four or five responses, you never get beyond four or five responses before somebody says, that's not the reason we lost, we didn't deserve to win. Yeah. That's how coaches have to handle it. They have to be that guy, you know, capital T, capital G. He has a specific name. He is the guy who comes in, five responses in, yeah, and says, that's not the reason we lost, we didn't deserve to win. Because Purdue didn't have to be in that position. I mean, yeah, if you get one more stop here or there, if you get one more first down, if you don't drop this ball that would have been first down inside the 20, if you don't drop this ball that would have taken 20 seconds off the clock and given you a second and four in crucial four-minute offense, if you don't fumble inside the 40, if you don't obviously turn over two kicks, that's the game, you know? Any number of things, as is the case with so many close losses, any number of things fall differently, you've won that game, and the interception doesn't matter. That's the way coaches probably have to handle it.
So a year ago, the NCAA decided that players could play up to four games and then still redshirt. I think an unintended consequence of that is that now you have in-season transfer of players, including some pretty high-profile ones last year. I think you might get some high-profile ones again this year. That trend has hit Purdue a little bit this week. I don't know if the things are directly related, but Darius Pittman, the tight end, decides to leave the program during the week this week. It hurts Purdue's depth, I think, an experienced player when there are few of them on offense, though he has not been a highly productive player in his tenure at Purdue. I guess, what do you think about those in-season departures?
Well, if this is tied to that, then I don't know if we can say that for certain quite yet. Yeah. He was playing, so if he wanted to play, technically right now, I guess he's Purdue's number two tight end, because Payne Durham is playing as well, but he's playing a very specific sort of role in the run game. So in terms of the traditional tight end role, Pittman was number two. He was on the field, you know, at the end of the game Friday night when Bryson Hopkins was ill. So the opportunity he had waited for is here now. So if this is related to playing time, it's an interesting time for that move to be made. But yeah, it is sort of going to be a little bit of an in-season free agency,
yeah,
waiver wire sort of thing in college football. You tend to associate that sort of thing with the positions that are more likely to transfer. Quarterbacks is the one. I think you're going to see quarterbacks bolt before you're going to see, you know, your number two tight end bolt necessarily. Yeah. Because I don't know if the number two tight end is always looking for you know, a more favorable depth chart somewhere else, whereas quarterbacks all come to the place they go to play. Mm-hmm. And you'll obviously only put one of them on the field at a time. So I think certain positions are more likely to be affected by this than others. But if the Darius Pittman thing had anything to do with this, yeah, that's probably a reflection of college football's new reality.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll bring in Alan Karpik, talk about a few Big Ten games, the ones we'll be watching this weekend. We'll do that here in just a moment.
Your neighborhood bar, 6th Street Dive Bar and Grill, is a perfect must-stop location on your way to and from the game at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette. Whether it be great food, authentic Tex-Mex, along with many Indiana favorites, served from 11 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day, sports, games, live music, trivia, or just fellow Boilermaker camaraderie, the Dive is the place to go. Don't miss Geeks Who Drink Trivia at 7:30 Tuesday nights and live local music without a cover charge at 10 o'clock Fridays and Saturdays. If it's college sports you crave, the 6th Street Dive has you covered there too with its multiple big screens. So dive on in to the 6th Street Dive at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette.
Life doesn't come with a financial roadmap. It does come with a lot of bumps and red lights. Steering clear of those doesn't have to be difficult. With First Source Bank's online money management tools, you can see all your financial accounts, balances, and transactions in one place. So you can easily set monthly budgets to help manage expenses and debt,
Get the green light to a successful financial future with First Source's money management tools. First Source Bank, where better is better. Member FDIC.
It's time to boiler up and join the Brahms Squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at FollettsPurdue.com.
What else is going on around the league? Let's take a look. It's the Big Ten Roundup.
Let's bring in Alan Karpik, talk a little bit of Big Ten football. Three games in particular that we are taking a look at this week. Rutgers, who Alan, I thought was really bad early on against UMass. I thought maybe the Minutemen were going to go there into Piscataway and get a victory. But the Scarlet Knights, to their credit, played much better at Iowa. The 20th-ranked Hawkeyes, noon on Saturday. Iowa was sort of, you know, ho-hum. I guess that's sort of doing Iowa-type things in the opener last week in beating Miami. But the Hawkeyes favored by 20 points in this Big Ten opening game. Any chance the Rutgers actually challenges in this one?
I don't think so, but Iowa's had a tendency early in seasons of letting people challenge. Rutgers needs to make a turnaround in its program. They're the number 14, it seems, or 13 and 14 with Illinois, and needs to make a change this year. But I'm just not sure that's going to happen there. I know Iowa may have some injuries that they have to deal with, but I like Iowa getting out of there. I don't know if it's 20 points or not, but they'll have an easy win on Saturday.
Yeah, Iowa without its left tackle for at least a couple of weeks. I think some in Vegas, some sports lines, sports books took this game off the board, at least temporarily. Number 21, Syracuse playing at Maryland. Maryland, the Terps, actually favored in this game. Now, not getting the home three. Last I saw, just favored by a couple of points. The Terps, though, really pounded Howard. Not sure I know anything about Howard's football program, but Maryland beat that outfit. Do you even know their nickname? What's Howard's nickname? No idea. 79-0. The Ducks, I don't know.
That was the Bison, I think. Because I think Purdue played them in basketball. I could be wrong on that. But, yeah, you know, Maryland, in a different level than Rutgers, again, needs to – everybody needs to gather their nuts and berries, so to speak. If you're not Michigan State, Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State on that side, so the other teams have to win every game if they're going to compete, because they're looking at four losses. That's going to be a real interesting game. That line has dropped. I think Syracuse was more of an underdog for whatever reason. Maybe they've come to reason that that one's going to be tighter, but a big one for Maryland certainly.
Number 25, Nebraska playing at Colorado, 3:30 kickoff. Nebraska favored in this game on the road by 4. Tim Brando says the Huskers are the 8th best team in the country. Thoughts?
I just haven't seen it yet, that's for sure. And I know that was a heartbreaking loss for the Cornhuskers last year, and that they may have revenge on their minds going to Colorado. But I like Colorado on that one just because I – just don't trust Nebraska yet, and I could be dead wrong. I often am, but that I think is going to be an interesting game there, and a big one for Nebraska again as Scott Frost tries to right the ship and get everybody believing outside of Tim Brando that this is a team that's worthy of being ranked in the top 25.
This used to be such a big game.
Oh yeah,
like, weird. When is Colorado going to like be more than mediocre again?
Yeah, maybe it's a function of the Pac-12 and the fact that that league kind of plays in oblivion sometimes, at least in the Power 5 terms. That's an interesting study because Colorado thought when it went to the Pac-12 that it would be able to do well in recruiting in California and all that, and it has historically been done some of that, but yeah, it's a hard one to figure out if Colorado's coming to the party or not.
It's a mystery. Been a mystery for a long time. All right, that's the Big Ten Roundup here for Week 2.
Let's go back in time. With a historical look, here's Alan Karpik.
All right, Al, let's take a historical look at this contest and actually look back to last week as well. Elijah Sindelar really was rolling through the first 2.5 quarters of the game. sort of slowed up there a little bit in the second half of the third and then through the fourth with a couple of turnovers. But you look at his numbers, he did a couple of things that are rare in a season opener.
Right, never been done of anybody throwing for 400 yards. Jim Everett had thrown for 398 in a loss to Pittsburgh. Kind of a similar loss in terms of a heartbreaking loss to open a season back in 1985. Elijah Sindelar becomes the first to throw for over 400 yards, and I think the seventh to throw for four touchdowns in a game. But there are liars, damn liars, and statisticians, and you trade it all for a win if you're Elijah Sindelar. But, yeah, his numbers were impressive. I think it's the 23rd or 24th best performance all time in yardage. Over 400 yards is obviously a career high for him as well.
So the yards are good. There is a bad trend, though, that Purdue has had, unfortunately, and that is blowing some fourth quarter leads. It's happened, you know, happened last week. It's happened a couple other times here during Jeff Brohm's short tenure with the Boilermakers as well.
Well, right. In Nebraska in 17, the game at home, both the home games, they lose that game. Tanner Lee, the quarterback, brought the Cornhuskers back from a 24-12 deficit to beat Purdue in the fourth quarter. And then of course, you look at the game last year also where you have the Boilermakers against Wisconsin had a two-touchdown or 12-point lead, I believe it was, and lost that one in triple overtime. You know, it's only happened six or seven times in since 2004, since the Orton fumble, which is another blown 10-point fourth quarter lead. Hate to bring that one back up. The worst one, though, Michigan State 2010. Purdue had a 15-point lead in that one in Sparty against the 11th-ranked Spartans. Purdue had no business winning that game. Was it Keith Carlos runs for 80 yards on the opening play? You knew something was up, but Purdue and Rob Henry had a huge lead in that game, and that also disintegrated. I think a couple big punt returns by the Spartans, or a big punt return, a couple big plays there, turned that game around. So it's a trend you don't want to continue if you're Jeff Brohm and Purdue. You need to finish games, and very, very disheartening that in 27 games, three of them have been blown fourth quarter opportunities that could have very easily been victories.
Future top model Keith Carlos.
Yeah, that's
I think
right.
That's correct. It's the way to ID him. Purdue looking for its first home win against an SEC opponent.
Yeah, that's the kangaroo statistic of the week here because I think they've only played three. Missouri last year. Vanderbilt back in 1942. They just need to put score on Vanderbilt. Of course, if they don't score, they won't win, Kyle, so because they played Vanderbilt twice all time and have yet to score on the Commodores in 1941 and 42. So, an SEC victory is important. This is a huge game Saturday for the Boilermakers, and yes, you better score to win.
I thought maybe we should do like historical late game calls by officials that have cost Purdue victories.
Yeah.
This one against Nevada, you've brought up just now, the Missouri game last year where they overturned that Jared Sparks touchdown in the end zone. It feels like that has happened too often against Purdue.
Well, and that's a thing too. You need things to, you know, even when you're trying to start a program and you're still under 500 now, you need some things to roll right. Some things did roll right for Jeff Brohm early on, but you need to get momentum back. That's why beating Vanderbilt, even though Vanderbilt is a bottom dweller in the SEC, it still is an SEC program that's been to bowl games, and that's why it's going to be a big challenge, I think, on Saturday.
Thanks, Al.
Thank you.
That's Alan Karpik with a historical look at Purdue and Vanderbilt. We'll bring Tom back here in just a moment. Continue to break this game down against the Commodores. We'll do that after the break. This is Golden Black Radio. If you're looking to list or buy a home in Greater Lafayette, Tippecanoe County, or the surrounding counties, give me a call at 765-412-5217 or email at kyle@chartersteam.com. Part of the Charters team at RE/MAX Ability Plus, we can offer a specialized marketing plan with photos, video tours, and more to help you sell your house while getting you in your next dream home. Contact me at kyle@chartersteam.com. On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill. Industrial and classic, the restaurant is built like a steakhouse but handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chopped salads, burgers, fresh fish and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients.
A warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer, inspired cocktails, and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, a cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event in the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table.
Often, things are worth more than they seem. For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa. Not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
Broadcasting from Golden Black World headquarters north of Purdue's campus, this is the Golden Black Radio Pregame Show.
And Kyle, back here with Tom. Let's talk a little bit of matchups in this one, Mr. Dean Hart, between the Boilermakers and the Commodores. I think for Purdue, a lot of this comes down to whether its defensive front can slow down or stop. Though stop seems like a bit of a challenge. Keyshawn Vaughn, we know enough about him to know what kind of running back he is. So can this defensive front slow him down a little bit?
It's going to be tough, Kyle. The whole front seven is going to have to get involved trying to slow down Vaughn, one of the best running backs in the Southeastern Conference, 1,200 yards rushing last year. Again, Purdue cannot let him get established. Obviously, if they can run the football with aplomb, that's going to make passing the football easier, right? And Vanderbilt's got a couple good targets, an NFL tight end in Pinckney as well. So goal number one for Purdue, if you're running that defense, you're not going to stop Keyshawn Vaughn, but you have to slow him down. Don't let him have big plays. Make him earn his yards. And don't let him run wild. If you can do that, get Riley Neal in 3rd and 8, 3rd and 7, and then maybe you can dial up some pressure, get after him, get some sacks, and get some turnovers, right?
One thing that surprised me about last week was that Purdue did not rotate in its defensive front as much as what I anticipated that it would, especially in game one. I thought that we'd see Giovanni Revere more at defensive tackle, Jeff Marks in there, and really rotate those guys around, especially playing in the altitude and, you know, wanting to be able to get the lead and then attack the quarterback late. We just didn't see those things. I was really surprised about that.
Yeah, you're right. Kai Higgins, Giovanni Revere, Jeff Marks did not play much at all. You know, the linemen that played the most, over 70 snaps, Karloftis, Barnes, Anthony Watts, Branson Dean played 47 snaps, I think, Kyle, and then Lawrence Johnson played about 27. So, you know, I asked Anthony Poindexter, the co-DC, about that this week, and he looked back and thought, yeah, he probably should have rotated more bodies, not just on the line, but on the defense overall. So they're more cognizant of it. Like Poindexter said, the coaches learn from game to game, just like the players. So, you know, they talked about this improved depth on defense. They need to use it.
Derek Mason, the coach of Vanderbilt, defensive-minded guy, said earlier this week that he wants to, you know, make Purdue one-dimensional. I think that's every coach's goal everywhere. But to do so by eliminating the Boilermakers' running game, and it's a running game that, you know, maybe it doesn't take a whole lot to try to slow down for Purdue right now because of the issues it's having on the offensive line, and it's down a couple of running backs and using a converted fullback as its lead back right now. What does Purdue do? Can it do to try to run the ball against a defensive front that's intent on trying to stop it?
Yeah, you're right. That's Mason's bailiwick defense. You know, if you're Purdue, you're probably not going to be able to line up and just run it down their throat, so you're going to have to maybe gimmick things up a little bit, maybe with the short passing game, maybe getting Rondale Moore a little bit more involved as a back or as a ball carrier with jet sweeps. And he only carried twice last week, so you're going to have to come up with some ways to be a little bit more unconventional in the ground game, maybe utilize the screen game a little bit more this week as well. So Purdue has its challenges, Kyle. I will say this. I don't think it would be good for Purdue if Elijah Sinlar is the team's second leading rusher like he was last week. I'm kind of hopeful maybe we'll see more of the true freshman King DeRue. I know he's a true freshman. I know he's prone to mistakes like most true freshmen. But, and the big but with him is he could be a special back, right? Why not live with some of his mistakes? Because I think with the ball in his hands, he could be the difference maker or a difference maker this backfield needs.
Yeah, that's my question. I think Purdue starts going to some of those younger guys as soon as this week. DeRue, Milton Wright, I know he made the one mistake. He's trying to fight for an extra yard. David Bell, who, you know, got off to a slow start in training camp, but I think we'll start to see him more and more. Could it be as soon as this week?
I think so. Jeff Brohm actually talked about that, Kyle, this week at his radio show. He mentioned that, yes, Milton Wright, yes, David Bell will play more this week. He talked about their baptism last week in Nevada. Milton Wright caught a few passes. Had the fumble, which was key, and then of course David Bell made the one big catch for a 49-yard touchdown. So we all know how talented those two guys are. Why not get them on the field? Why not see what they can do? And also with Darius Pittman's departure, maybe we'll see Garrett Miller and or Kyle Bilodeau get their or make their Purdue debut this week.
I sort of hate the phrase must-win game because it's used way too much. Does Purdue need to win this game?
I think so. I mean, you hate to say before one leaf has fallen off a tree that we're in must-win game territory, but you don't want to start 0-3 2 years in a row, right?
And, not if you want to win 7 or 8 games.
I understand Northwestern lost all its non-conference games last year and still won the Big Ten West. I still think from a psychological standpoint, if you're Purdue, you just need to win.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be pretty. They need to find a way to win. Just to have that feeling, to get a little bit of confidence moving forward, because, Kyle, right after this, here comes Texas Christian next week on September 14th. They're going to be even better than Vanderbilt. So Purdue needs to find a way to gut this out, be resourceful, respond to adversity, and get a win just to level your record. Because I don't know about you, Kyle, but if you'd have told me back in July Purdue will be 2-1 after its first three games, I'd say that's pretty good. So,
yeah.
Obviously, to get there, it has to start Saturday against Vandy.
Who you got?
I'm taking Purdue. I think they will find a way to gut it out. I think playing at home is going to help.
Yeah.
And could be close. I know the odds makers think it could be close. I think Vandy's going to struggle to stop Purdue's offense. I think they're going to find a way to score some points, and the defense is going to find a way to get some turnovers. I think Purdue's going to win by double digits.
I agree with you there. The lowest double digit. I got Purdue by 10, and this one, Purdue just needs to keep his foot on the gas in the fourth quarter, and I think maybe Jeff Brohm coming off the game last week and easing up a little bit, he'll keep the throttle down a little bit more on Vandy. If they can get a lead, extend the lead, I think Purdue gets a victory by 10, 31-21. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Kyle.
All right, that'll do it for our podcast for this week. A thanks to our sponsors, as always, the 6th Street Dive, Follett's, Purdue Federal Credit Union, East End Grill, First Source Bank, and Charter's team at RE/MAX Ability Plus. We'll be back again on Monday as we recap the game against Vanderbilt and, of course, pregame show for TCU again next week. For Tom Dienhart, Brian Newbert, and Alan Karpik, I'm Kyle Charters. Thanks for listening. This is Golden Black Radio.